tell Australia, ring Macca. Put everybody in the know. If you've got a little yarn, ring Macca on Australia's radio show. If the creek's been rising or the weather's coming up, or you found a little nugget or your horse has won the cup, put the billy on, ring Macca. Australia's waiting for you.
I wish good morning and welcome wherever you are. That was Laurie McDonald with his little poem called The Universe. Makes you think, doesn't it? On the program this morning, a wonderful Why I Live Where I Live, which will be about 20 to 9, quarter to 9. Don't miss it. But you, 1300 700 222. Love to talk to you wherever you are, all around the joint.
Want a hand, mate? Bring Macca. Someone will give it a go.
G'day, Macca. It's Anthony from Coleraine. So I run a local Tinder in the Bin project down here. And through this project, I'm talking to our local Salvation Army and discovered that people are struggling with electricity bills, as we know. Even firewood's gone through the roof. People just aren't turning their heaters on. Families that are struggling to save power, they're just not switching on their heaters. So we're doing a blanket drive. So what I'm trying to do is just encourage people to drop blankets off at my house in the local Salvation Army, in the local St. Vinny's, blankets or any bedding, just to try to keep people warm. And just with discussions with Mark, who works in our local Salvation Army, you know, people just coming to him, families, single mothers with kids, just asking for blankets, asking for doonas. It's getting worse and worse, and it's going to get worse. So I sort of want to encourage anyone around the country to go to your local St. Vinny's, your local Salvation Army, and drop off a blanket and hope we can keep a few people warm.
What a good thought. That was Anthony last week, and it was applying to Coleraine, but it applies to everywhere. Yes, and Vinnie's, you know the people in your community that are collecting those sort of things, blankets and beanies and all those sort of things. You can knit squares, and I know the gals around Australia do that all the time. Good morning, 1300 700 222, wherever you are, a few bits and pieces. Dear Macca, back in the 70s, I was a boxer, says Rod Christensen. Every day I ran 5 miles through Albion in Brisbane. One day, passing the football oval near Albion Gym, a young woman was struggling to run around the oval. When I spoke to her, she said, if I could just do one lap of the football field, I'd be happy. Just can't do it. Come on, let's do it together. Slowly, slowly, I said. She'd just had a baby. We managed to go 1.5 laps. And a few years later, I went to the gym for an aerobics class with about 20 other women. It's not really a man's activity, but anyway, after a torrid session with an instructor leading the way, I collapsed exhausted on the floor. She came over, the instructor, to see if I was okay and said, "Do you remember me? I'm the girl you helped round the oval." That started me, and I since then became an aerobics instructor, and I take 5 classes a day. Unknowingly, I'd helped her, but I always choke up when I tell what she did for me, says Rod Christensen. That's lovely, Rod. From Charles Everett. I attended the Orange Boer War Memorial Service on Sunday the 28th, we spoke about that last week, and froze with the 30 other people who attended, cool in orange in the mornings. The service to me is important as my grandfather served in the Boer War and died in 1911. My other grandfather was killed in the Irish Easter Rebellion in 1916 and is buried in the War Cemetery in Dublin. My father served on the hospital ship Wanganella for the entire Second World War, and as he was a merchant seaman, he was not considered a war serviceman, although they saved the lives of hundreds of soldiers, and at risk as all Royal Australian Navy sailors. Several hospital ships were sunk by Japanese submarines, one just off Brisbane. I use this Boer War Memorial Service to commemorate my family, says Charles Everett. And of course, Charles, lots of Australian ships, merchant marines, were sunk off the coast during the war. Lots, lots and lots, carrying coal and iron and all sorts of things, sunk by Japanese submarines. On the program this morning, as I mentioned, a lovely Why I Live Where I Live. I'll take you back to 1991. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, morning, Macca. It's Macca Truckee here, northbound out of Proserpine, but some days. Just been to Melbourne with a load of bananas and then loaded a load of meat, halal meat, out of Melbourne for Brisbane. And then I loaded yesterday morning out of Brisbane and I'm heading home for a couple of days' rest.
And home's Proserpine, is it?
No, home is Mission Beach.
Oh, wow. You get around, Mackie, but then truckies do.
6,500 kilometres a week, all done properly with, you know, fatigue management and everything. I've just had 8 hours sleep back there and I just grabbed a coffee from Bloomsbury. And, I'm just head home now. I should be home about lunchtime and, yeah.
And you have a couple of days off?
Yes. 48 hours off, yeah, and then do it all again.
So you sound like you're pretty busy, Mac.
Well, I tried that retirement, Macca. Didn't work out, mate. I came back to work.
Uh-huh.
It just doesn't suit my lifestyle, being around home, and you can only go fishing a couple of days a week. Then you got to mow your lawns, and my wife said to me, she said, oh, why don't you go back? She retired. She was 45 years as a nurse, midwife. She retired.
Tell me this, Mac. Do you notice, is it still busy out there, or is things slowing down a bit?
Nah, still busy, mate. Many, many vehicles, trucks, a lot of holiday makers. Oh, well, grey nomads on the road. But, yeah, no, I mean, people have still got to eat. And transport is the only thing that sort of keeps this country going. Did you know for a fact the only thing that's not delivered by road in Australia is babies? Midwives do that.
All right, Mac. So what do you drive, Mac?
Kenworth,
there you go.
Yeah, big Kenny, yeah. Nice truck, beautiful truck, yeah. No, I didn't like that retirement. I've come back out. I got another medical, and they said, yeah, you're all right. You can go for another 12 months, so here I am.
All right, Mac. Well, nice to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, a bit drizzly out here, eh? But I don't think I'd like to be a Melbourne night holidaying on Hamilton Island at the moment.
Why is that?
It's a bit drizzly. The rain, it's looking over to my right is the other. Looking over to Airlie Beach from here, I am now. It's very cloudy and drizzly rain. So if you've come from Melbourne for a really nice warm holiday, and Hamilton Island, I think it might be a bit wet.
Oh, there you go. All right, Mac. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
G'day, Macca. It's Bob here from Greenacre.
G'day, Bob.
Macca, a blast from the past. I often listen to your program and it just makes me feel comfortable when I listen to you. But Rod Christensen, I used to be a professional boxer in the 70s and from Sydney, and I remember Rod as a good hard man, a good boxer and a well-liked fellow.
I just read that letter a minute ago from Rod, and he was saying
he was a good fighter. Mm. There was no doubt about it, and we never got to meet in our careers, but he often came down to Sydney to fight the best fighters we had down here. And the other thing, the very next person you had on spoke about the ship, the Wanganella. I was born in New Zealand, and Wanganella was the ship that used to travel between Australia and New Zealand to bring migrants from both countries to one another's country.
There you go. Well, it was a hospital ship, I think, during the war, they said.
Yeah, it was a nice old-fashioned vessel that took migrants from New Zealand to Australia and Australia to New Zealand.
Tell me about your boxing career, Bob. Did you do well?
Well, my dad was an ex-soldier, and in the 60s and 70s, dad's ruled. Mum's came in the late 60s and started to ease up on it, but I was an amateur boxer, state junior champion. Turned professional when I was 18 and had 25, I think, professional fights. I never fought for a title, but I was a main event fighter. And Rod Christensen was a main event fighter, and he may have fought for an Australian title. We were a bit unfortunate. We were both light heavyweights, and that was era of Tony Mundine. And he ruled the weight division from middleweight to heavyweight. He was an excellent fighter.
Oh, I'll say.
Very few fellas beat Tony.
Yeah. And Athol McCoy rings us some from time to time.
Oh, I know Athol.
Yeah.
I'm actually the president of the New South Wales Veteran Boxers Association. And Athol's one of the salt of the earth type fellas.
He is, isn't he? Lovely bloke. It's a great...
Very big man.
It seems like a great bond of ex-fighters, doesn't it?
We're brothers.
Yep.
You set foot in that ring, even though you want to knock a man's head off when you're fighting them, you become, there's something about it, and it's not just me, it's a certain affinity with someone, and if they prove themselves in the ring, it doesn't matter whether you had one fight or 100 fights, you're a part of the brotherhood of boxing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I spoke to a bloke, 10 years ago, and he was telling me about his father, who was a boxer, and he said he fought in the... Oh, light, lightweight division or something, he said, but he used to fight blokes bigger than he used to fight in middleweight and stuff, but he was only lightweight.
They often did.
But he said...
Because there wasn't a lot of fights.
Yeah, so he said... But he's very quick. He said you couldn't hit him with a dish of peas.
Punched and moved. That was the idea, to punch and not get punched.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Bobby.
I didn't learn that lesson too well.
Good on you, Bob. Nice to talk to you. Where are you?
Thanks, Mac. I just live at Greenacre. It's the Bankstown area of...
Sydney.
Sydney.
Good on you, Bob. Nice to talk to you, mate.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep. My name's Gary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently preparing a paddock for vetch to go in northern Victoria near Cobram. And long-time listener, first-time caller. So up early, we're contractors helping out local farmers do crops. And we've just taken off a big maize crop that went in late after the floods in this area. And I thought I'd give you a call and tell you what I'm up to.
Yeah. What are you... You're planting something now.
It's called vetch. Yeah, it's vetch. It's a crop for to go into cow feed. So we grow feed in the Cobram Yarrawonga district for the local farmers. We grow a lot of corn that all gets sort of chopped, put into big piles of silage, and then we deliver that to the farms as they require it. And now we've got that crop off. We're now putting in vetch for the winter.
Vetch,
and
that's with a V, is it? V-E-T-C-H?
It's with a V, yeah. Yep, it's a very high-quality protein source for dairy cattle. Mostly some of our feed goes to beef feedlots, but most of it goes to the local dairy farmers in this area.
Well, you'd be busy too, Gary.
Yes, so I'm driving along in a John Deere tractor, 350 horsepower with a power harrow on the back, levelling off the paddocks, and my son drove this tractor till nearly midnight last night, and I've got up at 4 o'clock this morning to keep it going to try and beat a rain event that's coming in the middle of the week. It'll really top off the season around here. It's been a bit dry, and it's a bit crazy to have all the floods through this district in the spring, but a lot of the crops went in and the district, and it was a bit dry, but now we get some fantastic rain, so we're just trying to finish off our cropping program.
And how long have you been doing this sort of thing, Gary?
I sort of grew up in the dairy farming area, and was a dairy farmer for most of my life, and then got out of that and got into agricultural contracting with my sons. I sort of know the dairy industry really well and know what they need, and so we sort of do, got about 20 clients in the district that we look after, and we do grain harvesting and corn harvesting, drying of corn if it's needed, canola sowing, a lot of spraying, a bit of everything, I suppose, but just whatever the clients in the district need, we try and help them out.
You blokes are pretty important people, I'd reckon.
Yeah, well, we're sort of a bit of a dying art. There's not as many staff in the area, so local farmers need more contractors to give them a hand, I suppose. We started up this business about 5 or 6 years ago, and it was quite, well, just me and my son, really, and I was sort of working on other jobs at the same time, and now we're basically, there's four of us, and we are flat out.
That's what I thought. It just sounds like that, exactly. People with knowledge and know how to do things, Gary, they're important, people like you.
Yeah, well, I mean, a bit of a shout out to all the dairy farmers out there. I've got a great deal of respect for them as they get up, I mean, this time of morning, 365 days a year, and they love their cattle. They love their cattle like people love cats and dogs. And dairy farmers are just amazing people as far as I'm concerned. They've just got big hearts, and they think of their cattle all the time. And we try and help them out.
Well said, Gary. Nice to talk to you, mate. Good luck.
All right. Good on you, mate. It's nice to talk to you.
See
you,
mate.
Buddy.
Dean's in Maree. Be cool there this morning. Dean, good morning.
Yeah, morning, Mick. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Yeah, it's still dark here. It's got a bit of rain coming. I'm on the front veranda. And got the light on, and there's a whole lot of moss area. So that's telling me the rain's probably fairly close, actually.
Yes, I'll say. And cool in Murray this morning?
It is probably for here, I guess, at the moment. Maybe 13 or something like that, I think.
Yeah. It can get cold out there. I was in Maori about 5 years ago. I remember overnight she was cool.
Yeah, it's a proper cold. We can, get down below your zeros, and it's, you don't want to be in a swag them nights, that's for sure. it's pretty cold out here.
So what's happening, Dean? What are you going to tell me?
I just called up to sort of say to you, I'm also working this morning. One of the local station guys is heading off to Tennessee. And last minute thing, he needs his pair of R.M. Williams or put new soles on and whatnot. And I'm a cobbler, so I'm out here with some moss in my ears on the front porch, hand stitching his soles on at the moment. So he can pick them up at 10:30 and be on his way towards Tennessee.
And step out in Tennessee with his R.M.'s on, eh?
Yeah, with a new set of soles on them. So he'd be right. There's no holes in them now, so his socks could last a bit longer. And, it'd be a good sort of trip for him. But, yeah, out here I just sort of help people out and doing a bit of cobbler work and a bit of stuff like that. And, it's good for young lad.
Yeah, you live in Murray or you're just travelling?
No, that's right. No, I've got a camp. I live in Murray. That's right, yep.
And,
but I've worked like everyone. I've worked everywhere.
Are you busy? Is cobbling still popular? Getting your shoes fixed? It used to be, but you can. There's a bloke where I live in the suburbs, but he's gone. He'd been there, but he just gave up and moved. So you could take your shoes to him and he'd fix them and all that sort of stuff. He could fix all sorts of stuff, but he's gone there.
I suppose the city prices. Yeah, I think the city prices with having the renting shops and things like that are expensive and not so many people are doing it. And I think I'm pretty lucky out here because I think every fella out here has got one pair of dancing shoes and, they need attending to. And, the RMs are it. And they're quite expensive now, so rebuild them sort of for half the price and it's sort of an option for some of the people out here as well as doing all the other stuff, a bit of key cutting and saddle repairs and putting zips in the jackets and those sort of things like that. And I've got a trailer. I actually travel around the stations also as well, pulling a trailer with all these sewing machines on them and bits and pieces. And, it's just offering service to the people of the South Australian outback that, the city folk have got that option. Well, if they've still got a cobbler. But, that's sort of how it rolls out here for me, Macca.
Yeah, well, I haven't got any. Well, I've got a couple of pairs of RMs, but I haven't worn them for ages. But, and they're not my dancing shoes. But everybody needs a pair of dancing shoes, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, most fellas, Eddie, only got two pairs of shoes and a pair of thongs. So I've even got to repair a few thongs and... it's repairing anything. You'd be surprised what sort of turns up. Some ladies that need their, let's say their smalls repaired sometimes, and they might not be all that small, but anyway, they've got to be fixed up because we're just too far away from services, you see. So, all sorts of things need repairing.
It sounds like you're like one of those old-time, the Afghan people who used to travel around with all sorts of stuff. Selling stuff, but they'd fix things too.
Yeah. Well, I did walk across the country with three camels once upon a time, but I wasn't trading. But yes, I've only heard the stories about those hawkers, I think they were called, mm-hmm. And used to travel around. And anyway, they could earn a quid, was a good way of earning a quid, I guess. And, it's much needed, we're... a major service centre for us is like 400 kilometres. That's 800 k's return, and you don't do that trip unless you need to. And
yeah, all right. You still there?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. There, my phone was just been. I thought we dropped out. Yep. No, it's
All right.
It's kind of handy service there, mate. Yeah.
So you're sitting on your veranda, the moths are flying, still dark in Maree, and you're just fixing up the RMs.
Yeah, that's right, mate. I've taken out the cotton buds from out of the ears to stop the moths from going in. And I can put them back in there after having a bit of a yarn. But no, listen, mate, it was just good having a yarn with you. I'd listen to you most Sundays and just sort of fill you in and just share a little bit of world out here for a minute.
I'll see you next time I'm in Murray, Deanie. Good on you, mate.
Oh, good on you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you, bye. Brian's in Cronulla. Good morning, Brian.
G'day, Macca. How are you?
All right. How's the surf?
The surf's pretty flat. Weather's overcast. We've got the wind picking up from the south, and it looks like there's a promise of rain.
Yeah, that's what they say all over the place, throughout at Maroons, yeah, north of South Australia. So there's rain around, and up there at where was Mac the truckie? He was up around Proserpine. As we know at Proserpine, but
Proserpine,
he was he's Airlie Beach, wasn't he, Kel? And he looked out to sea and he said it's drizzling, so there's a bit of drizzle everywhere, Bryony. What's happening, mate?
Listen, I heard somebody there talking about the Wanganella, the ship that used to bring the POMs out from England.
Well, it was a hospital ship. We were talking about it as a hospital ship during the war, I think, the Wanganella. Yeah. Go on.
Sorry, it ended up down in the fjords in the bottom of the South Island at a project called Lake Manapouri Power. They brought it in and anchored it in a place called Deep Cove.
And
living on it. It was a hostel ship down in the bottom of the South Island at a project called the Manapouri Power Station. Right. They brought it in from the sea and parked it in one of the coves there, Deep Cove.
Mm.
And the Manapouri Power Station, what they did was Lake Manapouri was inland. They drilled into the side of the mountain, went down 600 feet, built the power station, and then they had to build a 6-kilometre tunnel to take the water out of the turbines. And that was where we were at the far end, where the turbines came out, and we'd train in every day and work, and that was it.
So you're from New Zealand originally, Brian?
Oh, originally from New Zealand, yeah. We've been here about 40 years now.
So that's your memories of the Wanganella. So it used to be a hospital ship during the Second World War.
And then it brought the POMs out from England, the 10-pound POMs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up down at Manapouri as a hostel ship, about 600 people on board.
And
it worked on the far end of the tunnel, because what they did was they started tunnelling from the Lake Manapouri end, and we started tunnelling from the ocean end and met in the middle.
Gee, and when was that? In the 60s, was it?
Yeah, late 60s.
Mm.
And, it was an amazing project, but it was getting a bit hairy when we were there. I was only about 18, and a mate of mine, we took off from Auckland and went down, and we ended up getting a job, and I'd only been there a week, and they gave me a diesel train to drive up and down the tunnel with 72-tonne of concrete behind me.
Wow.
it got a bit hairy in the end.
In the days before occupational health and safety.
Oh, there was none of that. In fact, I actually left because my mate got crushed up in the tunnel and ended up losing his leg. But he thought he had found the perfect job. He was called Blowfly Bill. He used to empty all the dunnies out of the tunnel.
Wow. Dear, oh dear, there you go. All right, Bryony, what do you do now? What did you do when you came to Australia?
Originally, I came to play football, so I was here for about 6 years, and then went back to New Zealand briefly, and then we came back and started on the Gold Coast and ended up back down in Cronulla. So we've been down here for about 30 years now, 35 years.
What sort of football did you play?
I played rugby league.
Oh, what was your last name, Brian?
Anderson.
All right, and you played for?
Well, I made the New Zealand side in 70, but I ended up, I did my knee, so I never went. And then, of course, in those days you had to work, and then I was offered a contract with North Sydney. So I came over here for 3 years and then ended up going up to Newcastle before they were in the Sydney comp and played for Central Charlestown up there.
Uh-huh.
And represented country from up there.
Well, you never know. The North Sydney Bears may make a comeback sometime. A lot of people are hoping, but anyway, who knows?
I don't know. Does it? Well, it'll be like that song, North Sydney, that's in Queensland, isn't it?
Good on you, Brian. Great to talk to you, mate.
Okay, thanks, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News. And last week on the program, Bill rang.
About the war graves in Borneo. My uncle, William Dunning, is buried on Labuan Island, which is just on the northwest coast of Borneo. He was originally in the landings at Balikpapan, killed at Balikpapan, they interned them there, and then I think after the war they were exhumed, and that was part of Indonesia, and they exhumed and took them to Malaysia. Labuan Island's part of Malaysia. We've been to the war cemetery there. Beautiful place, beautiful. I forget how many is at this cemetery, but it's a Commonwealth cemetery. There's probably 1,500, 2,000, maybe, I'm not sure. But all I know, most of them are either Aussies or Poms. And for some reason, there's one Kiwi there. How he got mixed up in the whole shebang, I don't know.
Following Bill's call, our correspondent on most things to do with prisoners of war in the Second World War, Lynn Silver, sent this. Ian, re your caller who visited Labuan War Cemetery, there are just under 4,000 graves, of which fewer than 50% are identified. About 2,200 of these are prisoners of war. There is one New Zealander, a bloke named Ernest Myers, who was a signaller who joined Special Operations Australia, SOA, an offshoot of Britain's SOE, which operated behind the lines in Europe. SOA, Special Operations Australia, carried out missions in Southeast Asia, and Myers, Ernest Myers, was with a mission codenamed Platypus, which was dropped into Dutch Borneo, not far from Balikpapan, in June 1945 to gather intelligence, hence the need for a signaller. No mobile phones back then. However, the pilot refused to allow the party leader to visually identify the drop zone, and they were dropped 10 miles from the intended insertion point and landed in a Japanese barracks. Three of the four in the party were captured and killed. The fourth, the party leader, managed to steer clear of the barracks, landed in a tree, extricated himself, and was eventually found by friendly locals, who took him to Balikpapan, which was in Australian hands. Myers' body and that of another was recovered, and some years ago I identified the grave of the third member of the party buried as unknown. Those buried at Labuan War Cemetery have been buried and exhumed several times. Myers, for instance, was buried near where he died and reburied in a temporary cemetery in Balikpapan, then moved to Sandakan, which was supposed to be the official war cemetery. It was all laid out and thousands of wooden crosses erected over prisoners of war who died in British Borneo and Sarawak and battle casualties from Balikpapan and Tarakan in Dutch Borneo. However, the ground was unsuitable for growing lawns and shrubs, so in 1947 everyone was exhumed, put on ships and taken to Labuan, where there was a small cemetery for those killed in battle there following the Allied invasion of Borneo on the 10th of June 1945. It was a monumental undertaking and took years. The cemetery was officially unveiled on the 10th of June 1953, the 8th anniversary of the Allied landings and 11 years after some of the prisoners of war died. Grass and shrubs grow very well in Labuan, and as the caller observed, it's a beautiful place, says Lynn Silver. From our weather correspondent Richard Whittaker, Lake Eyre, Katai Sander, situated about 700 k's north of Adelaide, has at least three notable claims to fame. Firstly, it's the lowest area in Australia, with some parts lying at around 15 metres below sea level. Secondly, it's an area that experiences the lowest annual rainfall in the country, with an average total of around 125 mils. And lastly, the lake also lies within the hottest area of Australia, with the equal highest temperature being recorded as 50.7 degrees C at neighbouring Oodnadatta on the 2nd of January 1960. Despite being called a lake, there is seldom much water in it, and for most of the time it is a flat, dry salt bed with an area of approximately 9,500 square kilometres. Heavy rain over the Channel Country in southwest Queensland will naturally drain into the lake, and rain over the lake itself can also produce rising water levels. But it was the usual dryness of the area, together with the extensive, flat, salt-crusted surface, that attracted the attention of Englishman Donald Campbell in the 1960s. Campbell was intent on breaking the land speed record for a wheel-driven car that then stood at 634 kilometres per hour. And he developed a car that could easily do it. This was the Bluebird, a radical, highly streamlined 4-ton monster powered by a 3,320-kilowatt Bristol Sidley Proteus gas turbine engine, and theoretically capable of 800 kilometres per hour. However, a long flat run of at least 33 kilometres on a hard surface was required, and Lake Eyre was considered ideal. In late March 1963, Campbell and his team arrived there with a record attempt planned for May in order to avoid the fierce summer heat. But against all the odds, rain soon fell after their arrival, and the track became unsuitable for any high-speed run. The attempt was abandoned for 1963. Campbell returned in 1964 and in better but still not ideal conditions set a new world land speed record of 648.75 kilometres per hour, disappointed that he couldn't go faster. Bluebird was clearly capable of doing so and was still accelerating as it exited the measured distance, being clocked at 710 kilometres. One of the main reasons for the slower-than-planned-for speed was that the track had not fully recovered its rock-hard surface that existed prior to April 63, and Campbell couldn't achieve his full-speed potential. Interestingly, Bluebird is still considered one of the most advanced cars ever built. In January 2012, Adrian Newey, F1 racing car designer for Red Bull, wrote in Race Car Engineering magazine, "I think in terms of one of the biggest advances made, although it was not strictly speaking a racing car, Bluebird, arguably for its time, was the most advanced vehicle. It was a revolutionary car that featured an advanced aluminium honeycomb chassis, featured fully independent suspension and four-wheel drive. It also had a head-up display for Campbell. It was the first car to properly recognise and use ground effects." It's interesting to note that should an exact replica be built today, and it did achieve its potential, it would beat the existing record of 750.03 kilometres per hour set by Don Vesco's Vesco Turbinator in 2001 and still be the fastest wheel-driven car today, says Richard Whittaker. This is the All Over News, and to let you know about things that you probably would be interested in happening around Australia, Catherine Shearing says, "I'm emailing to let you know about an upcoming free community workshop coming up soon in Northgate, Brisbane, this Tuesday, the 6th of June. Workshop is called Skill People Workshop and is designed to give people experience in using basic hand tools and small power tools. The workshops are run by female tradies from SALT, which is Supporting and Linking Tradeswomen, and are predominantly, though not exclusively, designed for women. In the workshop, participants will be given full directions to create a wooden caddy. All materials and tools are provided. SALT, Supporting and Linking Tradeswomen, delivers this workshop to schools all over Australia and have taken the Skill People Workshop to every state and territory and are currently travelling to schools in northern New South Wales and South Queensland. Having a day with no scheduled school-based workshops on Tuesday the 6th of June, that's this Tuesday, SALT have made an on-the-spot decision to run a free community-based workshop in Northgate, Brisbane, hence the short notice in getting this info out to you. You'll find details on the SALT, Supporting and Linking Tradeswomen, Facebook page. Other things that are on around the place, the Echuca Moama Steam, Iron and Trades Revival, next Saturday and Sunday, Rotary Park, Echuca. Tomorrow, Monday, is Western Australian Day, or simply WA Day, celebrated on the first Monday in June each year to commemorate the founding of the Swan River Colony in 1829.
Hi, I'm Bruce Matiski, a guitar picker, travelling the world playing my guitar, but when I'm home, I always pick on Macca.
I'm in Yugara. Your name is?
Lucy Alexis.
How are you, Lucy Alexis?
Yeah, pretty good.
You arrived a little late at our program. I didn't get a chance to talk to you. Where are you from?
I'm from Parkes, New South Wales.
Just out of Parkes?
Just out of Parkes, a place called Goonumbla.
On the land there, are you? Or?
Yeah. With Jeff White. It's mixed farming, so it's cereals, grains and merinos.
And how's things out there?
We've had three really good bumper years. Pretty good.
And what do you do?
I work at the CSIRO radio astronomy facility out of Parkes called the Dish. Yeah, I'm at the Dish.
At the Dish.
Yeah.
And what do you do there?
I look after the electronics within the tower and just make sure the dish is working so the astronomers can use it.
So you're an engineer of sorts, electronics engineer.
Exactly, yeah.
And how did you get into that? It's a great talk about girls getting into maths and science and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love my maths. I found at university the engineering course is predominantly maths and very little electricity or electronics, so I loved it.
And once you did that, had you been interested in space?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We don't know what's out there and you've got to think, 100 years ago, we only ever thought there was a solar system, let alone now we know there's billions of galaxies. So it's more to discover. We talk in things called astronomical units to describe the large numbers. So Yep, and Stroms. So the massive distances.
Like people talk about Sidharbs, trying to describe a body of water, and they say, how big's Lake Argyle? They say, oh, it's about 17 Sidharbs.
That's
so
right.
So gives layman an idea of how much water there is.
Mm. No, it's relative, isn't it? So you understand, yeah.
So tell me about your other half. It's Jeff, was it?
Yeah, so Jeff White, and he's a third-generation farmer out there at Goonumbla. And he's one of those, I always think, original hard countrymen, very sensible. But I think one of his great quirks is that he's one of the only farmers I've ever met that rounds up his flock of sheep on a push bike.
On a push bike?
On a push bike.
And what sort of country is it? Flat or hilly or what?
Oh, no, it's called Hillside. The property's called Hillside. There are, you know, rocks that appear.
Pushbike.
In, you know, all sorts of places. And
he's heard of motorbikes and horses, hasn't he? Yeah,
no, they're all ditched. They're sitting comfortably in the mechanical workshop. But, he loves his pushbike, his mountain bike, and he gets around on that.
How about that? He'd be fit then.
Very, very fit. Mm. I always think he should be the original solo man, you know, from those ads. Yeah. I've seen nothing yet, but yeah, no.
So he didn't come down today?
No, he's out cycling, so he would be racing around with the Forbes crew. Actually, we call him King Arthur.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How come?
Because he's a bit of a leader in our cycling group, and he organises us well and very strong, like King Arthur.
And how many people work out at the dish?
We have roughly 15 staff.
And are you busy? I mean, with Elon Musk, he's launching rockets every other day, isn't he?
And we do track launches, and SpaceX was one of the ones that we were tracking. We're also going to track the lunar module that's going to the moon, the Intuitive Machines remote robot that's going there in June, I believe, or possibly delayed.
So they don't send people there anymore, do they?
No.
What is it? Too dangerous? Too expensive? What's the story?
Cost, And we get enough information out of the machines and the instruments that are on them.
There was a song, Once Everybody Gets to Go to the Moon, written by Jim Webb. And it was written about 69 when we'd landed on the moon. And so I thought, well, it's only a matter of time. We'll all be living on the moon. But that's not going to happen, is it? I mean, it can't, unless money starts growing on trees.
Our planet is much nicer than the moon.
And they talk about Mars. Well, I mean, that's another world again, isn't it?
Yeah, again, very small atmosphere, so not particularly habitable. So, yeah, Earth is really good.
Well, that's Lucy, Alexis, lovely to meet you. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
G'day, Macca. It's Charles Evel here. I've had a bit of a talk to you before. I've just pulled in for a coffee. Got off the plane from Bali, and I'm on the way back home down to Ballina. And I seem to change towns on Sunday mornings a fair bit, and I listen to you regularly, but just very rarely get the chance to call back. Anyway, here we are. And I've been having interesting times, but then it's always interesting. I'm actually working up and Tin Can Bay at the moment, but I've got to do a quick trip down to Ballina first, and more mad driving.
You do locums anyway, around the place, don't you?
That's right, yeah. So I stopped counting at about 50 different rural towns and hospitals, and was just thinking about it. Just about everybody that talks to you brings up some kind of a story in my head about things I've been there and done stuff like that. So you talked to a chap from Borroloola, and I spent a year in Mount Isa a while back, and got up to Borroloola and went crabbing up the Norman River and worked in Normanton and Richmond, Julia Creek, poked around in there a bit.
Locums seem like a lifestyle, Charles.
It is a sort of a lifestyle, but it's a little bit like always cooking in somebody else's kitchen. So you walk in somewhere and you kind of know the layout of a kitchen, but you can't find the right utensil all the time. So makes life a little bit more interesting, but you never know what's going to turn up.
And what were you doing in Bali?
Well, I go there fairly regularly, in my travels, I've gone around and poked my nose into the Indonesian medical system, and fact, I went to the hospital where everybody went after the bombing, and I got taken in to have a look at the burns unit that was donated by the Australian government back then. Beautiful burns unit, but they had a sad story there because the chap was there because his mobile bicycle-powered soup store got hit by a car and dumped his soup all over him. And he wasn't in a real good way for a while. But the sad part of the story they told me was he didn't have any money, and the hospital was about to run out of the dressings that had been supplied by the Australian government, and he'd have to pay for them. And he couldn't, and he didn't have family behind him. So that's you know, one of those things we take a little bit for granted here in Australia, that you can go in somewhere and mostly get your dressings changed. But, yes, and I went out to a place called Kupang, which is on the western end of Timor. That's still part of Indonesia. And there's a little medical school out there, and they have a class of about 30 each year, I think, or they did when I was out there. But I keep thinking, you know, we make a lot of complaints about rural medicine in Australia, which, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of things need fixing. But in Indonesia, between each state, there's an ocean. So you can't just get in an ambulance and go to the main hospital. And quite a few of the smaller islands don't even have airstrips. So they do it a bit tough out there. But it did remind me that certainly working in rural Australia, that transport business can be a problem. And there's some funny decisions made centrally that don't take into account that when a farmer goes to hospital, they've got to get someone to run the farm while they're away and travel, and a lot of expenses involved in accessing the healthcare system, which aren't always taken into account. But anyway, I'll tell you a story. I was in a resort in Bali, and it's hard to not be a doctor. And this young woman sat down on a wooden bench, got a splinter in her bum, had only a bikini on. So, of course, when you're in a resort and you get a splinter in your bum that you can't reach it, you call for the doctor. So anyway, I had my Swiss Army knife with me, which has done sterling work in different parts of the world.
They build houses with them. They build houses with them in Switzerland. That's what my dad used to say. How they build houses with those.
Yeah, so I keep one blade very sharp, and it's got a little pair of tweezers in it as well. So I had a look at this bum with a splinter in it. It was about, you know, 1.5 centimetres long and under the skin. I thought, oh, well, I can probably put a nick in that and get the tweezers onto it and get it out. But the room we were in was a little bit dark, and this girl had a friend of hers with her who I said, look, I need someone to hold a torch for me while I do this. That's one hand for the knife and one for the tweezers. Anyway, so I was just starting to put a little bit of a nick in there to get the splinter out, and the torch started to waver, and then I felt this body leaning against me, and my assistant collapsed on the floor. We managed to resuscitate the assistant, and the procedure went ahead with a successful outcome. I don't think there was even a scar.
You're a legend, Charles. I thought you were going to say the battery went flat or something, but yeah.
No, the assistant went flat.
Oh, dear. Anyway. Idea. So where's your next move?
Well, I'm going back up to Tin Can Bay. I've been there for nearly 2 years now, which is nearly a record for me, because I got up there just at the beginning of COVID, and then I couldn't readopt my usual hither and yon lifestyle because people kept slamming borders shut in my face. So I stayed put there, but I'm about to move on. Haven't actually made up my mind where to go next, but got a couple of big rural doctors meetings coming up in October and
November. The major meeting for rural doctors in Australia is down in Hobart this year. We move it around from place to place. So I'm looking forward to getting back to Tassie, have a bit of a look. I haven't ever worked in Tassie. I've been down there as a visitor.
Do you think there's a shortage of doctors, just not only in the rural areas, but worldwide around Australia? Certainly seems to be in the Sydney area. It's very hard to get to see a doctor.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Macca. There's a real problem. So I have tried this out, and I know it's true. I can walk into a general practice in any part of the country, city or rural, and say, would you like someone to come here and work for you for a couple of weeks and give you a break? I've never been knocked back. I haven't accepted every job because I'd probably work about 104 weeks a year. but it is like that, and the availability of doctors, you know, particularly in general practice or you know, small hospital emergency is getting very difficult to staff these days. Anyway, there's a number of things behind that. It's probably a bit more complicated than we want to get into on a Sunday morning. But me and a gang at the Rural Doctors Association of New South Wales keep plugging away, trying to get things sorted out and improve the healthcare. While I'm talking to you, I need to give a big shout out to rural nurses as well. There are some absolutely fabulous people out there, multi-skilled, which you have to be if you want to work in rural areas, dedicated, great to work with, and the healthcare system wouldn't run without them. You can't say that strongly enough, that what the nurses are doing.
But you know, getting back to the doctor thing, maybe it's just something we've got to put up with. I mean, we put up with things, and it seems we don't have our priorities right in the world. We seem to talk about a whole lot of other things, but really important things. And I would have thought that the health system is just about the most important thing, followed probably by education. But we seem to put up with, and it doesn't seem to get any better. And it's always still hard to get in to see a doctor. And if you don't know somebody, once upon a time we had a family doctor, but that's all gone by the board, and now there's medical centres, but you can't get in, or all the sorts of things that have happened. So, but we don't seem to have priorities for those sort of things, which is quite amazing to me.
Well, it isn't an easy problem, and part of what we're dealing with now is the end result of policies dating back 20 and 30 years that we sort of have fixed a little bit but never quite come to grips with. And to be fair to the people running the healthcare system, that is not an easy job. It's a massive organisation.
Oh, no. Very hard.
And you know, having worked in quite a few emergency departments here and there, and the emergency departments are often picked out as well because people say, oh, I went in there and nobody saw me and la, 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 but they're still alive. I'll hear stories, I'll see somebody come back from hospital and hear the occasional complaint, although more praise than complaints, I have to say.
Yeah.
But working in the emergency department, you know how difficult it gets in there. So somebody will be sitting at the front and they might be nursing a broken arm and in a bit of pain, but at the back you've got somebody bleeding or trying to die of a heart attack or something. And so people out the front wait.
Exactly.
And, you know, everybody that's working in there cares about what they're doing. There's, I'd have to say, a bit of trouble and probably been increased by COVID, but people doing what's called burning out.
I've heard all of that.
So I can't keep doing this. And that's a difficult issue. And I think the departments of health are kind of aware of it, but there's probably more that could be done about that.
Charles, I've got to fly, but it's good to talk to you. And do you keep in touch from time to time?
Will do. If I've got, I'm just drinking a coffee at the moment. I've got a spare time on a Sunday morning. I'll give you another call.
Good on you, Charles. Nice to talk to you.
Okie doke.
See
ya, Macca.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Ali's in Coral Bay. Morning, Ali.
Morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Except for my throat. yeah, go on.
We're touring around with Snowy and the Seven Cool Dudes kids show.
Right, tell us.
It's a show about keeping fit and making healthy food choices and most of all kindness. That's a twist on the old Snow White story, and I wrote a book to go with it, so it's been going really well. We're just finishing the tour in WA, and we've been to Tom Price, Barabadoo, Esperance, Kalgoorlie, Mount Barker, Wellstead, Kalamunda, Fitzroy Crossing, Derby, Broome.
And you're a different person. They're great places to go, aren't they?
Love it. We love the whole of Western Australia. It's a fabulous state. It's just so beautiful. And we go to a lot of really remote places where children have never seen any live theatre. I just love seeing their faces. It's so cool.
It's a great experience, isn't it, to go to a play? It's really funny that there's people up there in front of you and they're talking and they're playing parts and stuff like that, and you think, oh, gee, I'd never be game to do that. Imagine getting up in front of all those people. And
yeah, it is. It's funny because afterwards I play the Wicked Queen and they give me a pretty bad time, and afterwards they still follow me around yelling at me and stuff. But, you know, I don't know what they're expecting to see when they come and see us, but they all leave with a big smile on their faces. So it's really been a hoot doing WA. I mean, we tour Australia with our shows. We've been doing it for 20 years. It's been going really well. Much tougher since COVID, really brutal with the prices of fuel and accoms in the West. But I might have to find a sponsor. I think it's hard. But, you know, we do it because we love it. And we just do. It's just fantastic. Couldn't think of anything better.
How long have you been doing this sort of thing, Ali?
20 years.
20 years.
So 20 years.
You know your way around then.
Yes, we've done WA a couple of times, but I hadn't been performing in Fitzroy Crossing until this trip. We just did that one the other day. And, you know, we had about 150 children there. It was fantastic. It's such a remote area.
And how's the bridge? Is the bridge been fixed?
No, it's finished.
Is it?
They're trying to come up with something else now. Our performance was the other side of the bridge, this side of the bridge. And we came in from Derby. It was easy for us. But I just drove down from Port Hedland yesterday, dropped off the cast. They've all flown home, and I'll be driving back with the truck across the Nullarbor back to Brisbane and Noosa after that, back home.
Well, we'll bump into you sometime and see you play. I'd like to tour a play. I think it's great fun, but it's hard being on the road, isn't it?
I love it. I think I'm just great living out of a suitcase. I just love it. But you're welcome anytime. I find a role for you.
I don't want to be the Wicked Queen or the Wicked
no,
King.
No, no,
the Wicked King.
Oh, all right. It's a deal.
All right. Good on you. Good
Have
on
a great day.
Good
Bye.
On you.
G'day, Macca.
Lisa Sweeney.
It's Lisa Sweeney calling, yeah.
It's written up here on my screen. How are you, Lisa Sweeney?
I'm very well, thanks, Macca. I just wanted to reminisce with you because you've been reading letters out from 1991. And in 1991, I was actually reading the news in your program.
I know. I remember.
And we had a wonderful couple of years there. And I always joke to people, I mean, I've never been famous. I've always been behind the scenes, but I've never been more famous than those years when I was reading the news in your program, because we had an audience. Remember, I don't know what the audience figures are now, probably still huge, but in those days we had 2 million listeners across Australia on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And if I ever went out of Sydney to any sort of, you know, social thing in the country or whatever, I remember being at a family reunion of a friend.
Yeah.
And I had a line of about 200 people waiting to speak to me not because they were interested in me at all, but just to ask me what you were like.
Come on.
What's he like? Really
yeah,
like?
Yeah. What does he have for breakfast? Really
yeah.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Thank you for that brief moment of fame that you gave me.
That's a pleasure, Lisa. It's great to hear from you. Last time I saw Lisa, I think, was at the film and television thing out at Fox.
After the
Fox.
Australian Film, Television and Radio School.
Yeah, I saw you there. And also we did a program once at St. Joey's, St. Joseph's
right.
School in 15 years ago, so 20 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, that's right. My son was still at school there, so yeah, you came and did an amazing outside broadcast there, which was fabulous.
And you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, that Lisa Sweeney's on the line here, who used to read news here. She's got a lovely voice. She speaks clearly and cogently. You can understand everything she says, unlike me sometimes, because I race. But Lisa, yes, you were going to tell me something else.
Oh, I was just going to say we've moved to. I'm still working full time. I work in the New South Wales government, but I have been able to move to the country because we are working from home. Mm. And I'm down at Bundanoon in the Southern Highlands, which is an absolutely fabulous town.
Yeah, lovely.
And we have a couple of really big events here each year that you really need to come and visit. I don't know whether you've been to Brigadoon before.
No, I haven't.
Brigadoon attracts about 20,000 people from all around the country, pipe bands, caber tossing, all that kind of fun Scottish stuff, which yeah. this town has an affiliation with. So I'm going to be speaking to you early next year to try and line you up to come and visit us for that.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Southern Highlands, very interesting place. Like lots of areas in Australia, attracts migrants from overseas, and because it's got that climate, I suppose, hasn't it? Lots of my Italian friends live down on the Southern Highlands, and lots of people like it for that sort of, it's cool and lovely winters and sometimes even a little snow.
That's right, yeah. We love the cold, so we love it here.
Lisa Sweeney, you're not reading any news anywhere. You should come in here and do the... since the ABC dropped the 7:45 news, and that was the time... The 7:45 news was the time when I had a cup of tea and ran down and had a wee and looked at the emails and all that sort of stuff. And so I thought, well, that's no good. We'll have to do our own news. So it's a news rather than 400 ABC reporters. We've got two here, Lee and I. And so we cobbled together the All Over News. But maybe you should come and script it for us. And
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do
no,
that.
No, you wouldn't. You're only...
I'd love to. Nothing would give me more pleasure than being able to tell you what to do again, Macca. I had a couple of years as your manager as well, remember? And,
oh, that's right, yes.
You know, there's not that anyone's trying to change anything in your program, but if there was any change to radio formatting, it was never going to happen on a Sunday morning. Macca was firmly in control of the format of the program.
It wasn't me, Lisa. It's the people. I mean, it's just...
I agree.
Yeah, it's just the people who ring. And, I mean, I look at what happened this morning and you just get all sorts of people. So that's what makes it popular, I think.
Yeah. No, it's fabulous. Don't ever go. Don't ever die, Macca. That's the one thing, right? Okay.
Don't stay as sweet as you are. Is that what you're saying, Lisa? Yeah. Don't change a thing. Stay as sweet as you are. It's great to hear your voice,
Macca.
Lisa.
Yeah, yours too. Thanks, Macca.
See you in Brigadoon, eh?
Perfect.
See ya.
Bye.
Hi, Macca. It's Bron, one of the remote area nurses. I've rung you a couple of times before. How are you?
Good, thanks, Bron. Where are you, Bron?
I'm working at the moment at Billy Luna in Western Australia.
Oh, right.
It's about 65 kilometres from Wolf Creek Crater.
Right.
2.5 hours from Halls Creek. It's a little community of about 130 people. Mm-hmm. I'm working out here with another remote nurse, Chris. He's one of your fans as well, so he gets up every Sunday to listen to Macca.
Well, it keeps you in touch, Bronnie, doesn't it? I mean, you hear from people all over. The Chook Show that's on in Canberra next weekend and... And taking a splinter out of a young girl's bottom in Bali, and all sorts of things you hear. All sorts of things you hear, Bron. So, Bron, how long do you stay there, or you fly in, fly out, or what happens?
Well, I actually live in New South Wales, and my husband Jeff, he'd be listening too because he's another Macca devotee.
Mm.
And I fly in, fly and do short contracts relief. So I'm relieving a nurse who's gone on leave, having her break. So I flew into Balgo last week and worked at Balgo for a week and then flew out here Friday, swapped over staff, and I'm here for 2 weeks with Chris, and then I'll go back to Balgo for a week and then I'll go home.
I was speaking to Dr. Charles this morning about that thing in Bali, but we spoke. He's a locum, and he does a bit like you. You're a locum, really, in some ways, aren't you? You just fly in and fly out. Well, he goes to various places, and sometimes he goes for a week and ends up staying for 3 months and things like that. But we were talking about burnout and things like that, and, you know, people need a break, and there doesn't seem to be enough nurses or doctors to go around, not enough of anything to go around, and people tend to work and when they shouldn't do, if you know what I mean. They're trying to fill in, and so there's a bit of burnout in your profession, especially because it's you're remote and you're in a new environment. And how did the doc describe it, Kel? It's a bit like going into somebody. What did he say when he going to a new place? A bit like doing something completely different. You know, there's a lot of negative transfer as well as positive transfer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So and I suppose, do you find that yourself?
Yeah, I'm fairly privileged, I suppose, because I do come and go. So I can go home and I get fairly regular breaks. But for the guys that are out here on the ground all the time, it's very difficult for them. You know, sometimes they're short staffed and all that sort of stuff for long periods makes it a bit tricky. But I think these clinics here aren't too bad at the moment. They all seem to be staffed relatively well, and they seem to look after their staff, giving them regular breaks and everything else. And I suppose that's all you can do, really. Burnout's in every profession, I suppose. It's one of those things that lots of people are talking about now, but it's been around for years.
Yeah, I think what the doc said was it's like going to a different, if you're a chef, going into a different kitchen all the time.
Definitely different communities are the same. It's like you come in and it's always mild anxiety for the first day till you find your feet on the ground. But it's, I've been doing it for a while now. So
yeah, and you get
adapt pretty quick.
Yeah, you do. You get good at adapting, and that's part of your job. Sometimes that's part of your job, you know. You say, well, that's what you do. I adapt. Yeah. And, So what's it like out there at Billy Luna? Be nice out there this morning.
Oh, at the moment, the weather is just magnificent. It's beautiful sunny days, shorts and T-shirts. And, the countryside is just still so green. When we flew up, we from Halls Creek, the pilot flew us over the Wolf Creek crater, and from the air it just looks like a turkey bore because it's got water in it at the moment.
Oh right, so, yeah.
And we flew over that and came up, and the countryside's just still so green, and there's still water in some of the, as you fly in, some of the water holes and things you can see, there's still water in the wattles are out up here at the moment. There's like a ground cover wattle and another prostate wattle, and they're just beautiful. You go for a walk and it's the, you know, red earth with all the beautiful greenery. It's lovely. It's a very remote part of the country. But
Beautiful Australia. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see Wolf Creek crater with some water in the bottom. I've been past it, of course, a couple of times, but to see water in it, I mean, that's different too.
Yeah, well, I've taken pictures of when I was working in the Barkly and flying over the Barkly when the drought was on, and it was just dirt, but you could pick out the turkey bores, and that's what Wolf Creek crater looks like at the moment.
Isn't that amazing? That's where the meteor hit all those, you know, I don't know, hundreds of years ago. And made a big dent in the,
And that's where John Jarrett made that horrible movie where they were. Scary movie. I never saw it.
No, I didn't see it either.
I don't watch horror movies.
No, anyway. Bron, great to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you, and a big shout out to all my family. They're all listening. They sort of hear me.
And say good day to Chris.
I will. He said, make sure you tell Macca you're up here with me, because he said, I have the radio on listening to him.
Good on you.
All right, and love to hubby. He's down there listening to you as well.
All right. Good on you,
Thanks,
Bron.
Thank you, Macca.
Great to talk to you. See ya.
Okay, see ya.
Bye. You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.